welcome everyone to another episode of Brainstorm Brewery. We're here at it again. It's been a while. It's been so long. It's been a whole week, but actually it's been 3 weeks because we got Corbin back. You want to say hi to everyone, Corbin? They missed you.
Yeah, guys, I'm back from Hawaii. I got back and then last week wanted to cast, but I came back sick, but not with Ebola. So that was, that's always good. But I'm feeling better and back and ready to cast.
Hey, more Americans have married Kim Kardashian than has contacted Ebola.
I saw that today.
What about you, Jason? How are you feeling?
About Ebola?
Or just in general?
That Spanish nurse just got cleared, so that's cool. I feel pretty great. My life is, it's going the way I want it to. Can't complain. Sometimes I still do. Got a job interview tomorrow. Can you believe that?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, non-MTG finance jobs. I don't know how I feel about that.
Why?
Yeah, really.
Because, I don't know, I fill out applications every once in a while, and every once in a while I'll get an interview and I'll go to it. I'll do my best. But I'm really liking the MTG finance lifestyle so much that if I don't get this job, I'm not going to be super disappointed. So,
Jason, why don't you just go ahead and tell everybody where that job's at so I can make sure to, send them some damaging information.
I feel like if they checked my Twitter or Facebook or Reddit, they would have all the damaging information they needed.
That's probably true.
What happens when you type in Jason Eyal into Google? What does come up?
It depends if you click on images or links. If you click on images, the first one is a picture of my penis. The second is a picture of my penis with my face photoshopped onto the head of the penis. So right there, you know, you're off to a good start.
Yep, we already know. So what about you, Ryan? Ryan Bouchard?
I can't follow that up. What am I supposed to say?
When we type you in, we get this, the suave in the hat with the glasses.
Yeah, there's like all sorts of, I didn't even realize like how many memes have been created about me at this point. Like I was the one like protagonizing most of this at one point, if I remember correctly.
My favorite was the Ryan Bouchard deal with it meme.
Yeah, that's like, there's like a ton of it. It's been linked all over the place. Like if you go to images, it's like all over the place.
Yeah, because my girlfriend, was it last week or 2 weeks, my girlfriend and her cousin was bullshitting with Ryan and Jason, and they're like, oh, let me pull up a picture. Pulled up the Ryan picture, like, oh, he's cute.
Yeah, I got the compliments from your girlfriend.
Hey, you're the Fabio of the podcast, see?
that's what I've been told. Some really weird images come up, too, that have nothing to do with me when you type.
We don't need to know about those, though.
No, they're not bad. They're just like really random people in the Magic community that I don't know that I've ever been associated with or like in any article with, but apparently probably have in order for them to be linked to that. So
that just makes me terrified to like Google Corbin Hostler Magic
of
images.
Of course, the first one that comes up, of course, is Babyface, my picture, one of my senior pictures.
Yeah, from that John Medina article.
Yeah, that Medina article was that was the best. If you guys don't know John Medina, he used to be, around the MTG Finance game, and we're all friends with him. He did an article where he talked about some different traders, and he found the most embarrassing pictures of every one of them to put in his article on Gathering Magic. It was beautiful.
Mine wasn't hard. No one else's was embarrassing at all. Like, Dan looks like he's strung out, but Dan always looks like he's strung out.
I think Medina was trying to get embarrassing photos.
Ogre just looks like a badass.
Well,
yeah,
like,
it's hard to... It's hard to make Ogre look like anything but Ogre.
No, if you want an embarrassing picture of Ogre, you get the picture of him riding the horse and he makes it look like a donkey.
Anybody want the peanut?
that's all really funny if you know Ogre. If you don't, he's really tall.
Yeah. Well,
he looks like Andre the Giant.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right, guys. So we got to get back to talking what we normally do. This is a Magic Finance podcast, and people were upset that we went out the trails.
Yeah, and Ogre is in Magic Finance, and maybe we should have him on our podcast.
Maybe you should. Why don't you guys start lining up some guests instead of relying on me all the time?
Hey, I'm trying. Ogre's, like, approach to Magic Finance is probably similar to his approach of, like, opening cans and such things. just smash it against the table enough times and hope something comes up.
That's actually pretty accurate.
So I don't know. I'd be like, so Ogre, what's your pick of the week? He's like, well, whatever damage cards they'll sell me for 20%. Yeah.
All right.
Really funny if you actually know him, but very
true. Let's move on because I assume most people don't know him.
Hey, let's talk about damage cards some more.
I don't know. Like, for Finance 101, I feel like we could do the ogre method of trading. That's pretty instructive.
Thank you, Marcel, for picking up on that, like, subtle movement into our Finance 101 there.
I got it.
No, you didn't.
I was trying to move us to the whatever. Finance 101 this week. Finance 101 this week.
We can't have four captains steering this ship, guys.
Yeah, but occasionally I can make a reasonable segue, and then
some people have
just like derail.
Ryan's got the dummy wheel that you give the student driver that doesn't do anything.
Goes in circles. I'm going somewhere, coach. I'm going somewhere.
Sure you are, son.
It's like this is the story my wife.
The boat.
This is. My wife always tells this story that when they were kids, their parents would take them to dinner, you know, and there's the arcade and a lot of restaurants you take kids to. And they would tell them to go play game overs, which just means go move the joystick around while it shows the game over display. And the kids think they're playing because they're kids.
That's terrible. I at least was given like a quarter. Like, you don't even give the kid a chance at that point. Like, you gotta fall on your face.
Well, I mean, the moment you put in a quarter, they're addicted for life, but if they all they know is game overs, then, you know, they don't know no better.
Yeah, that's a great way to approach life.
My favorite game is a game over.
I would give my younger brother a controller that wasn't plugged in and tell him he was a player, too.
Exactly. People always did that. And it worked in Sonic because Knuckles or Tails, whichever it was, would always follow Sonic around. So it looked like they were controlling it.
Until eventually they always pick up on it. Cause like my little cousin, I used to do that too.
They're kids, man.
No, he was like 3 or 4 and he eventually just like looks at me and he goes, it's not moving the way I want it to. I know you're controlling it.
He
put the controller down and just walked out. I was like, all right then.
Well, see, that worked, right? Now he's not bothering you.
No, it didn't work. The kid's
now
a little hated asshole now.
Well.
Yeah, then he went out and got the car and hit Ryan with the car, and now Ryan can't walk. So.
those issues may be separated from the video game issue. I'm not sure.
It's the butterfly effect at all.
That's true. Had I not tried to dupe him with the video games, I could walk right.
Oh, man.
Wow.
I always wonder if there was that one moment somewhere along the lines where, like, you know, it all changes, right? So you got to But speaking of that one moment, we should go back to that one moment where you're talking about Finance 101.
All right.
Boom. Segwayed.
Good one.
All right. Finance 101 this week. We're going to talk about we talked a lot about the different groups of players. You know, you have your legacy players, your standard players, your limited players, etc. One of the things we haven't necessarily talked about is the casual players, and specifically why in Magic Finance, casual players and casual cards are, actually a really good thing to enjoy and to know a lot about. So, you know, it's really easy to keep up with a standard. You know, people want the most popular cards that are played. The casual cards, and we're talking stuff here that is not, you know, not necessarily commander, but just a kitchen table casual. That sort of stuff is more of a niche market you have to know about, but is very profitable once you do. So, I mean, why don't you go ahead and just explain to people what kind of cards we're talking about here?
Every kind of card. Like, people just want to play their favorite cards. You know, if – say you take a trade binder into, like, an SCG Open, and this is what really turned me off of trading at events like that. People would look through 3 binders and be like, I like your playset of Snapcaster Mages. I'm like, oh, really? Because every single person in the room has been interested in my playset of Snapcaster Mages. How about the 900 other cards I showed you? No, I just really need Snapcasters for standard. If you show a casual player the binder, they'll pull everything out. And they're like, oh, holy shit, Killer Instinct. Oh, wow, Primal Crux. Oh, wow, this is cool. Like, anything that looks cool, if it's a giant monster, if it's a expensive enchantment that does cool stuff, if it's mill cards, casual players love mill cards. I've sold more Glimpse the Unthinkables than I've sold Snapcaster Mages in the last 12 months. Like, people play what they like. They aren't constrained by what's tier 1 in standard. They're constrained by what they like. They're like, oh, I don't like, you know, fairies. I like slivers. And they'll take all your sliver stuff. To prepare to trade with casuals, you just take every card you have and just make them look through everything. So there's not even anything really specific that I can tell you other than, like, just be prepared to show someone a lot of cards. And if they tell you what they like, you can steer them towards stuff. Like, that's how I steer people towards, like, oh, well, you want this Jace, that Milsom. Oh, cool. And you want Mind Funerals. Have you read Mind Funeral? No. How about Nemesis of Reason? And all of a sudden, you built a deck for him.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, I sell cards out of the store. And when a lot of the people that come in to buy cards for me are not people who want to come in buy 4 Siege Rhinos and 4 Manus Riders. You know, they have that stuff. They bought their own boxes and got that stuff. The people who come in are the people who play at home and maybe show up to a pre-release but don't ever come up for a Friday Night Magic. And I just ask them what they play. And their answers are, oh, I got a green-black deck. You know, I just want to get out really big guys. Or, you know, I have a mill deck. Or I have an elf deck. So, you know, while these things are very varied, there are kind of some common themes that run through them. Basically, lords. And by that, we mean things like, you know, what my favorite's obviously Master of the Pearl Trident or Lord of Atlantis. That boosts all your creature types because kind of these casual groups, they make very themed decks. So somebody will have an elf deck and they'll need Elvish Champion or something like that. So those kind of lord cards hold up very well financially over time. Like Imperius Perfect, for instance, is one of
like
the big ones.
Like Adaptive Automaton. You literally can't go wrong with Adaptive Automaton.
Exactly. Or, you know, like you said, Mill is another one. Honestly, Life Gain, Cradle of Vitality, stuff like that is not bulk either because people like to gain life too. I mean, so like I said, it can be a lot of things, but there are some themes that run through it. So using Adaptive Automaton as the example here, financially, the reason to like them is because their value is not tied to standard or, you know, modern play or anything like that. They typically hold value very well and go up over time.
Casual so, never rotates.
Yeah, so when Adaptive Automaton came out, that was a card that I was all about picking up in the set review because it had no application in standard and it was, you know, 50 cents or whatever. And it's, you know, quadrupled. It's 5 times as much, 6 times as much since then. You know, it's just one of those that you can pick these up and you don't have to worry about them rotating. You don't have to worry about them going out of favor in standard. You just know that that crowd will be there and they're not going to triple overnight like, you know, a Dig Through Time did when it broke out in standard, but they are going to provide those year over year gains. Sanguine Bond was a great one before it got reprinted. And now that it's been reprinted, it's a good one again at the new price. Exquisite Blood was kind of the same way. And once you've been doing this for a while, you see those coming. You can see the cards. They're going to be casual hits down the road and you can just pick them all up. And in a couple years, they'll get there. And that's how you really. You can get a throw-in today, and in a couple years, it's a $5, $6 card, and you just can grow the value of your binder without ever giving up much to do it. And that's kind of how, over time, you develop a great collection. And that's why we like casual cards so much financially.
Yeah, and, like, you can check in on old sets, and just like I use Trader Tools for this, you can use whatever pricing utility you use. You sort by set, and you look at some of the cards that are used to be bulk rares and are $3-4, and it'll be like, why is Crucible of Fire $5, you know, before it got reprinted? And,
Dragons.
You know, Angels and Dargons, you know? So if you have bulk rares, you should definitely check them because anything that's sort of like a Timmy card, it might not actually be bulk.
Yeah, and as a, you know, we as, for the most part, at least a semi-competitive player, if you're listening to this podcast, I assume, you probably have cards like this in your binder and you may not know about them. The number of people for years who didn't realize Sanguine Bond was a $6 card was huge. People didn't realize Crucible of Fire wasn't a bulk card because you just look at it and in your mind you go through, okay, saw no standard play, sees no modern play. I don't ever see this around. It's probably just bulk. And then it'll turn out to be $3-4. So you just kind of, it's just something to keep in mind with your collection.
And a reason to always buy bulk rares when people offer them to you.
Of course.
It's very true because you'll find these cards. I mean, just as well as you may not know, most of the people around don't either. So,
yeah,
the best, you know, just the best way to get real value is actually just to buy bulk rares because the worst thing you do is you get rid of them back for bulk.
Yeah.
Yeah, bulk rares are literally 100% upside.
And on Moto, there is a casual crowd, but it's less so. I mean, there's a casual room or the just for fun room, as they now call it, where people like to play their casual brews. And so there's an active market there. But, like, you won't see EDH because you'll see some EDH, but not as much because it's just hard to play EDH on Moto. It's just a pain in the ass. But you'll see cards like, you know, Master Biomancer, which was a $450 card for pretty much its entirety in standard. It's still a $450 card now, and that's strictly on, casual play. So like, trying to predict the casual market on Moto is just going to drive you crazy sometimes.
Yeah, it seems it's very different because a lot of the casual groups in paper revolve around a social aspect, you know, playing at the kitchen table or even playing Commander. It's a social thing, and that's, you know, harder to, more difficult to achieve on Magic Online.
Yeah, but it happens. Like, you got World Spine Worm now is a 730 card. It's the second most expensive card in Return to Ravnica at this moment, which is...
It's crazy.
It's nuts. It's just really nuts. So, you know, you'll never figure it out. So if you try to figure out on Moto, if someone has the formula, please tell me. But, yeah, trying to figure out the casual market or expecting your cards to feed into a casual market probably won't happen. So, I mean, if the cards bulk, you know, just sit on it, and maybe over the long term, it may just turn into something later. But other than that, not much you can do.
All right. We've got some emails. To everybody sending them in, keep sending them in. We're actually developing quite kind of a backlog here. So there's maybe a mailbag episode coming up in the future. But today we have to get in Elizabeth's email because she has sent us several and we hadn't got to them yet and we don't want her to feel left out. So we're gonna knock them out right now. Elizabeth, sorry it took so long. She says, Dear Brew Crew, I was wondering if you could talk about some of the cards that have really taken off since cons came out, such as Glittering Wish or the huge spikes in the foils of Monetary Swift Sphere and Treasure Cruise. I had thought about buying a playset of Monastery when it was $5, but I thought as it's an uncommon in a set that hasn't been open for long, there's no way it will go much higher. And now it's $25. She's also wondering if you think Monastery may affect the price of Goblin Guide, since some people are saying it could replace it in certain builds. She says, I originally underestimated Eidolon and the Great Revel and, well, ... got burned when I traded a few off before the price jumped.
Is that a pun? That sounds like a pun.
Also, sorry for the third question, but do you think Eidolon's price will come down or is about $8 where it should be given it's a card that sees modern play from a small spring set? Keep up the awesome work, Elizabeth. So let's start with the first one here. What are your guys' thoughts on some of the initial spikes out of cons, especially, you know, when we talk about common and uncommon foils like Treasure Cruise and Swift Sphere? What's the future trajectory of them look like?
Still just going to go down over time until they stop being open, and then they'll probably go up because they're modern playable, but they'll slowly decline because they are modern playable.
It's really hard to know with something like Treasure Cruise, because Treasure Cruise never wasn't $20. Whereas you had that opportunity to buy the Swift Spear for cheap, Treasure Cruise was a $20 foil, like, pre-sale. Because everyone's like, oh my god, you know, this is Legacy and Vintage playable. You know, this is bannable and modern. It's so good in Vintage, people are saying, like, it's an unrestricted Ancestral that you can't stop with Mental Misstep. It's ridiculous. So the Eternal players are getting better about pouncing on those foils. Something like Vandal Blast that is just ridiculous in Vintage was cheap forever, and everyone's like, until everyone's like, oh, wait, foil Vandal Blast. This card's nuts in Vintage. So there was never a good chance with Treasure Cruise. We didn't really know whether Monastery Swift Spear was really going to get played in Modern, but I think Monastery Swift Spear should not be the same price as Treasure Cruise, even though it's uncommon, and Treasure Cruise is common, just because... Like, it's modern playable, it's
also typically the blue players.
It's Legacy playable, that's right. Yeah, it's getting...
It's the blue players who foil out their decks more so than the
yeah, but
players,
I mean, it's Legacy playable, so that's a good point in Monastery Swift Spear's favor. So,
$18. I mean, it's an $18 foil. Where do you think it would go? You know, where do you think it'll go from here?
Somebody asked me about this the other day, and I told them at first, I was like, well, you know, I wouldn't go necessarily picking them out to make any value on it. But at the same time, you know, we haven't quite hit that max supply, but I also think people are discovering how good the card is, but I don't necessarily know that it's seen every deck that it could possibly see play in. Like, I've heard of people trying to jam it into Delver variants and stuff like that now. And so if that happens, I mean, we easily could have, you know, a $40 foil. But it's going to take a little while. I think where we're at now, unless you want them yourself to play with, in which case I don't think I would really say, you know, don't buy them, because I don't think they're ever going to drop below 10 or 15. Like, it's just a very good card. It could have easily been a rare, and then this price would have been just as justifiable. And you're not getting that many more copies of this card foil as you are any other rare, really. So, I mean, there's going to be more out there, but the percentage-wise is not that big of a jump on an uncommon.
So Monastery Swift Pier, I think its price is going to be a little more tied to increasing supply and therefore have downward pressure on it, just because, you know, the price was based on, you know, supply and demand. Treasure Cruise, I think its price has a high memory attached to it because it was $20 before the set even came out. So I think that price is going to be a little stickier just because of price memory.
So what about the Eidolon question? What do you guys feel about that? Do you think it's going to stay?
I feel like the price is right.
Yeah, I mean, it's getting more play in Modern than it is in Standard. Some of those cards that are, you know, Modern playable, if you look at Snapcaster Mage, Liliana of the Veil, stuff like that, didn't really go down that much at rotations.
And really, a good comparison is something like Deathrite Shaman, where it didn't see a lot of Standard play in the first place, but look at the value that held because of the Eternal play.
Yeah, and it's not – it's from Journey to Nyx, right? I mean, it's an extremely small set, extremely under-open set, just given that it's a small set and a third set. So, I mean, yeah, I don't think that it'll necessarily be cheaper. It may go – I mean, it'll probably drop a few dollars in rotation, but I don't think it would go under five even that. So I feel like it's pretty right. All right. She asked about Goblin Guide. Do you think that – Swiss Sphere will replace Goblin Guide? Or what the future of Goblin Guide?
No, Goblin Guide is a much better Swiss Sphere, but Swiss Sphere is like Goblin Guide 5 through 8, if you want to go that direction.
Yeah, I don't think Goblin Guide gets replaced either.
I don't know. I'm not a modern burn player. I don't think the price
drops. I don't think the price drops that much. I'd be more worried about a reprint in something like Modern Masters 2 than I would about Swiss Sphere replacing that.
Yeah, because Goblin Guy gets played more just that deck also. Like, some Zoo variants play it, like...
Yeah.
Plus, it's a Goblin, so it has, you know, tribal applicability.
I mean, yeah, Goblins is actually kind of a fringe modern deck that, you know, Goblin Grenade's strong enough that sometimes those take off. Plus, it's just got a, you know, high price memory attached to it.
Yeah, despite the, It was,
Grand Prix promo.
Yeah, Grand Prix promo.
All right, so we have one more from Elizabeth because we promised we'd get them all. She says, hey, guys, love the show. This is her second email. This is why I say that, you know, we put her off for too long here. But she says, love the show, especially the recent stream of guests bringing in new topics. I'm trying to foil out my commander deck and just happened to notice an awesome price on the Near Mint Foil Mystic State from a reputable store for $10 when the next cheapest was $20. I ordered it and felt great for finding a good deal. This segues into my question. Are there any tips for watching the prices of cards to catch when they're – is that one random one significantly cheaper than the rest? Also, are there differences in watching the prices of cards between different markets like foils, only playing Commander versus Standard and Modern cards? Thanks, Elizabeth. So I guess her question is kind of, you know, everyone wants to be the person to find a great deal. How do you keep an eye out? Or do you guys have any tips or tricks to share for finding those underpriced goodies?
MTG Goldfish. That's it. If you watch Remoto cards and you want to see the trends and certain cards are underpriced, you could just look at their price list and start to see deals appearing. Takes some navigating, but it definitely helps.
To me, it just seems super luck-based. Like if you find it, you know, $10 cheaper on Card Shark than it is on TCG Player, I like to check a lot of fringe websites that don't get cycled through that often. Card Shark's a good example of that. Although Card Shark's getting a little more efficient, because with the small number of copies, one person can basically watch that whole site. But if you have someone selling on TCG Player, when they go to list for $10 and they're like, all right, TCG Mid's 20 on this, bro. Sure you want to list it for 10? That's a mistake. And it doesn't really get missed all that often. Because if a second guy comes along and sees that TCG Low is 10, he's more likely to list at $9 just to sell his. So it could be that maybe that 20 was the wrong price. So I would just like verify it on other sites. See if it's 12 everywhere else or see if it's 20 everywhere else. But honestly, just go for the cards you want, I guess, because it's so hard to watch every single place cards are being sold and there's no real way to catch a mistake. Because if a card is half what it is everywhere else, that's someone's mistake. And,
you just
can't really
have to
predict
be
that.
Right place, right time. The one tip I would have is that, and you know, this is something a lot of people do now, so it's maybe, you know, not necessarily as effective, but if you are looking at eBay, you know, getting a bid scheduler for eBay so that you can put in your max price and it will make the bid for you at the last minute. So the difference is, you know, if you put in your bid on eBay and someone outbids you, it will continuously, you know, bring you up and bring them up, and you know, everyone's watching it go the whole time. But if you see something, you use a bid scheduler to set it up to bid for you at that last second. It allows you to snipe eBay auctions without actually sitting there and trying to watch the seconds tick down. That's really the only trick I think that there is for, you know, kind of making it more efficient to snap up those, you know, those underpriced cards.
Also, type stuff wrong on purpose.
Yeah.
Dual lands. I bought Jace the Mind Sculptor with an E for $30 cheaper than every other Mind Sculptor on eBay. The guy's like, why? Why'd it go so cheap? Because you spelled it wrong, doofus.
Well, the go-to, right, is dual lands. D-U-E-L.
Oh, yeah, D-U-E-L lands. Oh, yeah.
I think that one's probably fairly out at this point. Doesn't quite work as well.
Arena and Contested Cliffs are the only dual lands I know of.
But anyways, there you go. Elizabeth, thank you for emailing us. Everyone else, if you have questions, keep them coming in. We'll do our best to get to them when we are able to.
I'm glad we finally answered Elizabeth's email. I didn't want a whole Dear Stan situation going on.
Was that a Eminem reference? Is that what that was?
That was
oh,
impressive.
Wow.
I just heard that song today too.
Wow.
But that's not something I'd admit.
I mean, it comes on Pandora. So.
Yeah, if you have a Eminem Pandora station.
Hey,
I
Eminem's
in fact do, so yeah, you can suck it.
I like Eminem. Come on.
Do you get a free Eminem Pandora station subscription if you go to a shitty high school in Michigan?
Sure.
Ouch.
There Jason are much worse bands Jason, to be listening to.
You're hating
Jason's
on everybody.
Me.
Come on.
I will poop on my own home state. I do not care.
Eminem is
yes,
a very
my
popular artist.
My Eminem station, my Eminem
like
station
Eminem.
Is right between Nature Radio, Phil Collins Radio, and Led Zeppelin Radio. So there you go. You can make fun of me on all accounts. I don't even
Anyways,
care.
That was a nice reference, Jason. If you guys
I did.
Heard
I liked
the song
it.
Stand by Eminem, it's a little messed up.
Okay.
It's a
all
little
right.
messed up.
Let's move on from that.
You know what's messed up? Me having to return a foil momentary blink 3 times before I could get a real good copy on TCG Player.
Really?
Is yeah. this the anti-shout-out?
Anti-shout-out to those
Tell
people.
Us the name of the store.
No, it doesn't matter.
Marcel, it matters to me. Tell us the name of the store.
I don't even remember the name of the store.
Oh, all right.
So we did mention to, like, I know we had the Stoke the Flames argument, but we did say to, like, dump those as quick as possible, right? Because of the whole promo thing.
Oh, with
we
the promo
did
thing?
Stoke the Flames?
That sounds like
yeah,
a good pick of the week.
It's the December F&M promo.
Oh,
I think what
Ryan,
you mean.
Dumped all
that's,
38 copies
that's been
that you
an,
had.
That's been announced for like a month.
Ryan, I think what you mean is the December promo, not necessarily to be given away as an F&M promo.
No, the December
as per,
F&M
as
promo.
As per the new rules.
Whatever. Like, it's the F&M promo. I don't care. Shut up, Corbin.
You just sniped your own pick of the week for later in the show. That's what you did.
I already have really good pick of the week for later. So.
Oh, okay.
Don't worry about it.
Does it involve these top eights we saw last weekend? Because
it does
we saw
not.
Even
it involves,
more decks.
It involves, well, I'm not going to use Chromanticore as much as I really want to.
This
but,
is the anti-segue, Ryan. Tried to lead us into the top eights and you just refused.
Yeah, no, I don't. You haven't been here to talk about coverage, Corbin. We want to talk about the Pro Tour and about how awesome it was for you, and you weren't here last week and you suck.
I was just very sick. I'm sorry.
Well, tell us about it a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, I will tell you that the Hawaii Convention Center is very nice and that I spent about 20 minutes at the beach in my 4 or 5 days there. So I did a lot of magic, did a lot of drafting by the pool at the hotel, which was great. Did not do a lot of Hawaii stuff given that I had to get back from work, but the trip overall was awesome. The Pro Tour, I'd never even been to a Pro Tour, in any capacity. So this was a new experience for me just seeing it. And I will tell you that Wizards goes all out. The studio was amazing. There are so many people behind the scenes, you know, running basically a mobile TV studio back there. It's just crazy. There's so many people who work to make it, and I don't think I've ever worked with a group of more talented people than were there making that show run. Everyone was excellent at what they're doing. Everyone knew what they were doing. Everyone did what they were doing well, and it, enabled it to run very smooth. And you can see it when you watch the stream and you see how, you know, how good the coverage is and how the players are comfortable. And watching that level of play from the perspective that I had was really a great experience. So it was, everything I hoped for and more. So it was very enjoyable. And I hope that, you know, I'll be at some more in the future.
Now, Corbin, I think what all of our listeners really want to know is whether on the coverage you described anybody who was undefeated going into round six as Hawaii 5-0.
You know, I did not.
Oh, epic fail. Epic fail.
You know what? That's a real missed opportunity. That's not a missed opportunity on my part, though, because I'm not the pun guy. All right? I was there with Ray Walkinshaw and Mark Calderaro. And they are both very good at puns and being funny and writing, and I take a little more serious tact. So you should pass on to them that that was an excellent missed pun opportunity.
Is that a pun?
Oh, yeah.
Definitely?
It's yeah, certainly. It's a play on what 5-0 could mean.
Yeah. Anyways.
I thought pun had to be more...
Are you saying it doesn't count as wordplay because it involves numbers? Because
no, I think it's wordplay. Conversation.
I think it's wordplay, but I don't know if I would consider it a pun.
Oh all my right. gosh!
All right, pun Nazi. Pun Nazi. No puns right for you.
I just want to clarify because I've had a hard time trying to explain what a pun is to people that don't know what a pun is, and really trying to put it in a nutshell has been like very difficult.
Nobody. I think if I encountered an adult who didn't know what a pun is, I would have a hard time explaining anything to them.
Anyways, pass on to them about that missed pun opportunity. The Pro Tour was great. We saw a very diverse top eight, which was awesome. Some very good players. And people kind of thought the metagame was settled to an extent. And I would say that the Grand Prix and the Star City top eight last weekend kind of shook that up and disabused that notion a little bit.
Did the merfolk make a splash there?
I see what he did there. You see, that was a pun.
See, that's a pun.
Oh, wait, that was a – I missed it?
Yeah.
I thought puns had have numbers.
So, Corbin, as besides the Pro Tour, what did you enjoy about Hawaii?
Drafting with the coverage team. That, I mean, going back to the hotel and drafting is just kind of relaxing, winding down with everybody who you just worked 13 hours with. It's pretty enjoyable. You know, for Hawaii – I did take a midnight walk on the beach. It was with Ray Walkinshaw, and we had McDonald's. So, you know, that's doesn't get much better than that, right? Anyways, I sucked my feet in the water there. The day I left, I sucked my feet in the water for a little bit. The beach was beautiful. The weather was fairly nice. The countryside looked great on my trip back to the hotel, to the airport. I did not get as much time to explore Hawaii as I would have liked.
Now, are you hooked to traveling via Magic? So I hear a lot of, you know, pro players, especially I was looking at Ochoa, as he's like, you know, being a pro player, travel the world, get to see it all. I mean, how do you feel, you know, now that the coverage has brought you to these different places? Do you like what it's doing for that? Are you hooked in?
I mean, I would love to work and travel to every pro event that I am given the opportunity to. You know, it's pretty awesome. Traveling, you know, itself, spending a lot of time on a plane, that part's not great. I think the first time I get to go somewhere for an event and actually spend some time there afterwards on vacation and enjoy it, I think that's how you get hooked. You know, is then you get the best of both worlds. You know, unfortunately, given the, you know, the nature of football season and my not Magic job, I did not get that opportunity in Hawaii, but I enjoyed it enough that I would like to do it as much as possible.
There you go. Everyone write in, tell Wizards how much you like Corbin's coverage. You got some links, Corbin, so people can read what you did. Well, they don't have to dig through the Wizards website to try to find any of that.
Well, yeah, thanks. I mean, while we, you know, if we're going to talk about that, the one thing that I was most happy in Hawaii to be able to do was there's a player named Sean Pottinger. He's been to maybe half a dozen pro tours. But he recently gave up competitive Magic maybe a year ago to – he's a teacher in Hawaii, is working on becoming a full-time teacher. And when he heard that the Pro Tour was coming, he teaches an after-school class with maybe 20 kids in it where he teaches them about games and how to relate to, you know, their classmates and respect and all of that through games. And one of those games is Magic. So when he heard the Pro Tour was coming through – he said, you know, this would be incredible if I could take my class with it. I'm gonna email Wizards and see if there's any way that I can just be allowed to bring them in and show them the room, and, you know, they'll see it happening. That'd be cool. Well, Wizards did one step better and just rolled out the red carpet for them, as he put it. They got the backstage tour of everything. They got a Q&A with members of R&D. They got to see the entire operation during the top eight, which is not open to the public. They got to be in there and see it and go behind the scenes and see the studio and all of that. And the kids loved it. It was just a really awesome thing he was able to do. And I was able to write about that last weekend. I think the article is titled Passing the Torch on the Wizards website. That was something I was extremely happy to be able to do because it was such a great story.
Yeah, I know that you like doing the background stories and the pieces that give more character to the characters in Magic.
Yeah, man, I just like to tell stories. Everyone, no matter who you are, no matter how good you are at Magic, has a story, and sharing that is why I write, you know, so.
All right, well, how about we move it out of stories and move into picks of the week? Is that just too abrupt of a segue?
No such thing on this podcast.
What about the top eights?
We have no laws.
What about the top eights? That's what I tried a couple. I mean, do we want to talk about them?
Did anything really exciting happen in them?
I mean, the red deck won, but then the guy cheated, and we can talk about that.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead, Corbin.
That is a good story to tell.
Jason, why don't you tell us, since Corbin...
I talked a lot, yeah.
Yeah, well, you didn't talk at all last week, so...
Because you weren't here.
Okay, so I think a lot of people noticed this from Frank Lepore on Facebook, maybe? It was circulating on Twitter. There was a big Reddit post about it. There was a player that was playing at the SCG Open. He won the Modern Open and the Standard Open. And there's a nice damning shot of him shuffling face up, sort of, so he can look at his opponent's deck and his own deck. People are alleging that they're like, wait a minute, I played him and I mulliganed to five, you know, both games and lost. It's looking like he's doing some shuffle tracking and some fake shuffles. Basically, he was looking to see non-land cards, flipping them to the top of the deck, and then shuffling in a manner that he didn't disturb the top 10 cards. Then he would hand the deck back to the opponent. They'd draw a seven no-lander hand and go, ah, fuck. Then they'd mulligan. He'd do that again, and they'd mulligan to, you know, five, and he'd win. So this is a player named Trevor Humphreys. The Reddit post resulted in a few SCG judges finding out about it. I think Jared Silva was posting in that thread. And he said they were going to do an investigation. They were going to put a freeze on sending him any payment, because they do that, you know, like 2 weeks out. And they wanted a statement from him and a lot of people in the Reddit thread, including a guy named Max Perlmutter, who's written a few articles on our website, has said, well, wait a minute, you know, I played this guy and something similar happened to me. You know, I mulliganed really badly against this guy. And this suspect shuffling he actually did on camera. So this is something he's so comfortable doing, he did it on camera. So Trevor Humphreys is being investigated by SCG and the DCI. It's not looking good for him. There's a lot of evidence coming in. And just the videos and pictures are just very damning. It's very clear that he's holding the deck so that he can see the cards and not holding it down so you can see the backs, and that he's shuffling in a manner that doesn't disturb the top 10 to 20 cards of the deck when he shuffles. So it looks really bad.
So, yeah, I mean, and a lot of people were excited about, you know, his deck winning, and then it may not have been all that legitimate. It's nice to see Star City react so proactively to it. I mean, this was a matter of hours and like two of them between, hey, what do you think this guy did, to the community having dug up video evidence for months of him and playing and Star City getting on it and his money being frozen and all of that. I mean, this is, you know, you wish you didn't hand your deck to your opponent to shuffle and get it back stacked, since the whole point of shuffling your opponent's deck is to keep them from stacking it. So it's just disappointing that this is, you know, that it's possible for somebody to win an event like that and have it not be caught before the event is over.
Well, getting screwed like this is not completely inevitable. There are some ways that you can actually protect yourself. One thing I heard is you used to be able to cut your deck after your opponent shuffled it for stuff like this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if the rule changed, but I saw some people chime in on Reddit and say, you know, I always have my opponent, the last thing they do, I ask them to cut my deck in either just in half or in thirds after they shuffle it. The very last thing I want them to do before they hand it back is to cut it. So they can rearrange those top 10 cards all that they want. You're going to get, you know, a different 10 cards on top if they cut the deck before they hand it back.
Which is still, I mean, yeah. Even in this, it's not full because then maybe you get the hand of all lands, but it is certainly better than having it intentionally stacked against you.
That's just watching your opponent. If they're trying to engage you in conversation, you should still pay attention to what they're doing. And don't, honestly, a lot of this is awkwardness. Don't be afraid to ask your opponent to, like, why are you shuffling like that? You know, don't be afraid to ask your opponent to hold the card so that the face of the card is facing down. If they are looking down and not looking straight ahead, like, I'll look off into the distance when I shuffle. So if they're not doing that, it's better to just pay attention. I think a lot of judges are like, shit, I noticed something and I, you know, blah, blah, blah. A lot of judges are kicking themselves. So this is still something that happens. People are still getting away with it. So just, you can do a few small things to protect yourself. And you don't want to go in assuming that everybody is going to cheat. But a lot of these people said, you know, something in my gut was telling me it was wrong. Your brain picks up on a lot of things subconsciously that people do subtly different than, you know, your honest opponents. So if your gut tells you to watch your opponent, make sure you watch them and don't be embarrassed about asking a judge, you know, to either watch what your opponent's doing or anything like that. It's, you're not a bad person for asking for that. It's the judge's job to make sure that everything's on the up and up.
You know, and it makes me feel naive because I am not the most coordinated person, so when I shuffle somebody's deck, I try to shuffle it face down. But, I mean, I kind of have to see it, or honestly, I will just, like, miss when I'm throwing it, you know, and whatever. But, like, when I hand people's decks, I just tap it a lot, or I just give it a real simple cut, and I don't usually shuffle it, just because, like, I assume I'm not being cheated, you know? And I guess maybe that's naive, but it's just something that you'd like to think that we're past, but to see somebody like this who's able to do it in the finals of an on-camera Star City event with a judge over his shoulder, it just, you know, this is not Alex Bertaccini with a giant reputation of cheating over months and months that you're playing against. This is something you don't think you'll notice, a judge watching doesn't notice. So just don't feel, like I said, don't feel bad about it. And I mean, don't take anything for granted if you're playing in a serious tournament.
Well, there's actually been some condemnation of the SCG judges that I don't think is super fair. I mean, what I heard was maybe if they paid more attention to the match and not getting the right token. And I think it's not like, oh, the judges aren't paying attention. But I think there's something to that. I think the judges should be, you know, they shouldn't be distracted. 100% of what they're concerned with should be making sure the match goes fairly and, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's
so
fair.
I don't know. I'm certainly not blaming any judges. I know they work very hard, and a lot of my friends who were judges, you know, kind of are kicking themselves for not noticing this. But honestly, you don't want to go into it assuming everyone's a cheater.
It's real difficult to notice, man. It's in the finals.
And if you see that he was pretty good in how he did, you would have to be, like, literally watching him as he shuffles. Like it's easy for the judges to be distracted, possibly. For them not to catch that. And he was shuffling multiple times, so I was like, you know, there.
So here's the other point of controversy, and I don't know if it's fair to call it controversial, but it's just a question that has been raised. You know, his prize money is not going to him. That first place prize is going to charity. And that's great, it's going to charity. Nobody's going to complain about that. But at the same time, those people that he may or may not have cheated out of the top eight and beat them in the top eight, I mean, the reality is, they lost a lot of money because they, you know, allegedly or potentially could have been cheated. And some people have said, you know, that prize money would be better off kept within the other members of the top eight who were, had it unfairly taken away from them. What are your guys' thoughts on that?
I heard that it gives incentive for people to call their opponents for cheating.
Is that bad?
I mean,
they're not cheating. Nothing's going to happen.
Yeah, but you also don't want a tournament where, like, people are using cheating as, like, slow play, essentially. Because even though you're going to get X amount of minutes added on, by the time the judge gets over there and stuff like that, like, if and you people, wanted to use that, you could start using it as a slow play excuse if, like, if people start white knighting cheating like this.
I mean, people are already incentivized at a cash tournament to say anything that would in, that would possibly get their opponent CQ'd. I don't think that necessarily changes it. But I mean, if you're the person who lost to him in the top eight, do you feel cheated out of money? Or, I mean, do you say, you know, hey, it's going to charity. I can accept that. It's just.
So here's my issue.
Cheated out of a lot more than money.
Here's my issue with it. If you could, without a doubt, prove that you were to win that game with, if he had not cheated, then it would be different if, like, my opponent had zero cards in hand and next turn he has two cards in hand and both of those cards he uses to kill me, and without those two cards, I would have won the game. However, if it is just on shuffling, like, yes, it definitely does not help you winning, but you cannot guarantee that you would have beat him on fair grounds. So it's difficult to reverse something on that.
I mean,
that.
Does it matter? You're not the person who – I mean, you're not the person who made it not fair grounds.
No, I think it does matter because there is no guarantee that you were going to get that money whether or not he had cheated. I think, like I said, had the cheat itself directly impacted the game and you could see what that was what caused you to lose, then sure.
Okay,
but,
so what
like,
if
there's
you're...
no proof that every time he was shuffling that he was actually cheating either.
So what if you're the guy who lost to him in the finals when he gets stuck on one land because his opponent's sect is
frankly,
stuck
I feel like donating it to charity is just the cleanest way to do it. Like, I mean, may not agree with it, but it's just the cleanest. Like, there's no, kinda... there's no way to make it, you know, any more fair, I guess. Like,
that's kind of my thought too. I mean, at the end of the day, if you're a 19-year-old, 20-year-old college student playing in a Magic tournament and you feel like you've been cheated out of money that you would have won, you know what? That legitimately sucks, and that can make, you know, $1,000 can make a fair difference in a college student's life. At the same time, like you said, you can't prove it. Nobody can ever be upset about it going to charity, I think is – I like it from SCG's point of view. Yeah.
So do we have anything else we want to cover on cheating before we – move into pick of the week and then.
How about we get Corbin to a pick of the week before Jason cheats him out of it?
Ooh.
I wasn't ready. Oh my God.
Oh, see.
You got me. I know. I wasn't ready.
Wait. We just went over the scenario last week. Literally just this.
I didn't listen. Like, I didn't listen to last week's. So I don't.
Well, basically, we'll tell you how it plays out.
We know you didn't listen.
We ask you if you have a pick of a week. You don't know what the pick of the week is. So you spend the next 3 minutes to figure out if a pick
Why'd
of the week.
Why'd you do that to me?
And then you get mad at Jason because Jason takes your pick of the week that you thought you didn't have and then rinse repeat.
You never have one until Jason comes up with it.
Is that how this works, really?
Yeah.
Only
really
for
is. 1 week
and I get thrown all the way under the bus.
My pick of the week, if I'm Corbin.
You didn't.
I know what mine is. I like mine. I don't want to try to steal Corbin.
I even had a good one earlier. No, I don't.
See, you should listen to the cast maybe this one time. It might be worth your while.
I heard that it was an hour of bashing on me.
No. Not a whole hour.
There was a lot of – it wasn't actually – no, so like – it was kind of bashing at first because they were like, ah, fuck it. Corbin's not here. But then it turned into like, this is all the space that Corbin takes up. Why is Corbin not here?
The episode's called Corbin's True Value.
All right. I got a pick of the week.
Pick of the week. Time for the pick of the week.
Jason's not getting it. My pick of the week is Hushwing Griff.
That was mine.
You're a liar.
That was my pick of the week.
You're a liar.
I really hope that was his pick of the week.
It was.
Nobody believes you.
I'm so happy.
No.
No, that was legitimately my pick of the week.
Sure.
Get wrecked.
I believe him and I'm so happy.
Oh, you suck.
Anyways.
Blurted it out. Oh my God. I was too busy trying to figure out what yours was going to be.
I still don't know if I believe you. Anyways.
Oh,
Hushwing Griff. This is what people have been talking about. Some of the decks at the Pro Tour, the Jeskai decks, actually main decked four of this card. Just because, you know what? It really shuts down the Siege Rhino decks and the Wingmate Rock decks and stuff like that. And it's from M15. Which, as we've seen with $20 Goblin Rabble Masters, can support some very, very expensive cards. Don't know if this deck will make the impact in Modern. People have thought about it. but it's starting to trend up. It's between 2 and 250 right now. I don't think it'll go crazy, but it also wouldn't be a surprise over its next year in standard that if it hits $5 at some point and doubles up.
That's fair. I heard some people talking about playing this instead of Rabblemaster and Jeskai. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. It might have some legs.
Yeah, that's pretty similar to what I was going to say about Hushmaster.
So
I'm going to go next so I don't get my
second.
No, shut your mouth. Mine's Proteus Staff.
Okay, not stolen. Not even close.
Good.
Even the same format or
Jason, tell us what Proteus Staff even is for those who don't know.
Okay, Proteus Staff is a card from Mirrodin, so right there, there's not very many Mirrodin cards. Proteus Staff is it's an artifact that you pay 2 colors and a blue, you sack a creature, and then you go through your library until you find a creature, and then you put the other cards back in any order. So if you're playing this in your Narset EDH deck, you completely restack your deck in any order, and you get your Narset right back out, and then when you swing with Narset, you get all the triggers in the world, and you're like, oh, well, you know, I have played 4 non-creatures, and one of them's Time Warp, so I guess I'll just take another turn. And, you know, the 4 cards underneath there are going to get me some more value, and you basically just win the game. Proteus Staff is a card that was identified very early by EDH players wanting to build Narset decks. If you look, like, the week Narset was spoiled and then, you know, the set came out, the week the set came out, the price of a foil Proteus Staff doubled. It's a lot easier to make the price go up on foils than it is on non-foils. I think there's real upside for the non-foils because not everybody wants to foil out their EDH decks. I don't foil out EDH decks because I would rather spend that money just building a new deck.
Or buy
so the fact that there aren't that many copies of the non-foil, it's not going to take much money for you to speculate on it, and I think there's real upside. Proteus Staff has been discussed in, you know, decks in Modern. It's not real great. It's not real great in Legacy, but it's a very good casual card. There aren't a ton of copies out there, and Narset players are already affecting the price. If Nekusar players can affect the price on Winds of Change that's been printed 96 times, Narset players can definitely make Proteus Staff go up quite a bit because Proteus Staff is just insane in that deck. And there's just so much upside. The card's very cheap right now. And the non-foil price hasn't moved and the foil price doubled.
I think that's a really good pick, Jason, because in addition to all the things you said, it's also polymorph. Like it's got that going for it outside of Narset, and that it will just polymorph you to an Eldrazi.
Sure, it does fun stuff in EDH. It's like, oh, that creature's gonna die. Well, screw it. It's a different creature. Yeah, that's a good point. It is a polymorph.
Look at Jason, EDH picks. This would have never happened a year ago.
He would have laughed at somebody for making an EDH pick and been like, that format's terrible. Why would you play that?
That is how I sound.
Yeah, pretty much. Mm-hmm. I'm right behind. I'm like number 2 on the cast for impersonations, clearly.
You got to do it a little more nasally and whiny.
With more cursing.
More cursing.
I sound like I'm the race I am, and Marcel means thinks this.
Oh, my God.
I sound nasally.
I think it has less to do with your race than your social class.
Whoa.
That's not even an insult.
This is getting real. Somebody else's pick of the week.
All right, I'm at my pick of the week. Seriously. The card, it's bulk right now. No, it's like, well, I had like 3 different cards. I was trolling over the cons bulk because you guys were talking about how there's no cards in cons that are worth picking up, and I think I've identified at least one. And the one that I have noticed over the past couple of weeks that went from a 1 of in the sideboard to start off and then a 2 of in the main and it is now a 4 of in the main in this Tamir Monsters decks is Crater's Claws. And right now you can still get these for 50 cents. I mean, they're a dollar median on TCG. It's a 4 of in this deck and that doesn't look like it's going to be changing. Everybody I've talked to said that is like the best card in the deck. And that leads me to believe that it may also see, you know, as this format progresses and it's not just only Tamir can run this and there's going to be other archetypes, especially when the rest of the block comes around that can support it, I think this card is going to have a lot more legs and I'd like to be in on it now.
I want to say Jim Casale on our website wrote an article where he identified Crater's Claws. I think the thing I really like about it is when you have Ferocity, it's a shock if you need a shock, and then it's a shock with upside if you have more mana.
Mm-hmm.
It strikes me as similar to Mizzium Orders, the kind of card that, you know, isn't ever going to be really expensive, but it could easily be $3 or $4.
Yeah, exactly. But Especially right now, like I said, it's pretty much bulk. You're getting so many people right now that have busted all this cons product, so they're so easy to come by.
Yeah, it's available under a buck. It's hard to dislike it at that price.
And it's played way more in standard than Howl of the Horde, which I think the casual players have picked up on. So I think the standard players are a little slower to really pounce on this card. So I think there's real upside.
Well, and that teamer deck is kind of new in that it was played a little at the Pro Tour, but the people on it, Kibler didn't do great, did much better at the Grand Prix, kind of got on people's radars. And Savage Knuckleblade's already $3 or $4, so maybe that's not the best target.
Yeah. Well, and I think unlike Savage Knuckleblade, which is really locked into this particular archetype, this card has potential future value in the sense that it's still a very good burn spell if, you know, a deck comes around that can utilize it.
Mm-hmm. You don't need to be a teamer to get ferocious.
This is correct, but it does help.
What do you got, Marcel?
So my pick of the week is a Moto pick, no surprise, because you're not gonna do much in paper, even though there's potential, but it's gonna be Mutavolt. Morning Tide is the lowest price, and I think that's gonna be the one that'll have the most upside compared to M15, just because it's a smaller pool. But it's $4 on Magic Online, and I don't see it getting much cheaper. It's been on a steady decline, so it could probably go down to $3 before it starts to climb up. But while this was played, this was like pretty much a $10 card until just recently. So the odds of it staying that cheap is unlikely. And there's times that it peaked up to $25 when it was not in standard and being played in modern at various points, particularly during PTQ season. So, you know, pick up your copies now, wait some time, and you should definitely easily double up on this, if not more.
So wait, it was a $25 card after the reprint?
No, after the reprint, it was during standard.
Wow.
Yeah, it went all the way up to 33 in Magic Online during, Born of the Gods? Oh, wait. Journey to Nyx.
That's non-sane. Wow. Cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, it should, I mean, yeah, there's a reprint and that's going to definitely downward the price, but I still think that, I mean, it's seen 27, during Return to Ravnica, it's seen during Dark Ascension, it's seen 30 there, and just before Innistrad, it's seen about 25 there. So there's peaks that it reached up to 25. So now maybe the peaks may be 15 to 20, but I can see it possibly hitting those peaks and a good opportunity to get out of it for buying in at this price.
So what do you guys think about Paper Mutavolt at $15 while we're on the subject?
I mean, I have 12 of them sitting in a binder.
I guess that means Ryan likes it at $15.
I think Ryan likes it at buy list prices, which is
I think Ryan bought them at like 6 to 8. So I like that it's down to $15 and I can buy them for 6 to 8.
Do you think here's the question. Before the reprint, it was 35. Where do you see it going? It's still a card played in Legacy. It's still played in Modern, although not necessarily in huge numbers. I mean, where do you think it's at a year and a half from now? Do you think it's doubled up to 30, or do you think it'll be more or less where it's at?
It depends, I think, on how much play it sees. Surprisingly, if you really look at Mutavolt overall between Legacy and Modern, a lot of the decks that we're running it are kind of falling out of favor. So I think it might take a little while for it to jump back up to where it was, just because you don't necessarily have the pressure on it right away. It's going to happen inevitably, but it's how long it takes to get back to that, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, I want to give a little bonus one. Hooded Hydra is 60 cents. It's like 50 to 60 cents on Magic Online. Yeah, I think this card just needs the right deck because there's a lot of potential. There's a lot of upside to this card. Card's quite powerful, especially when you get the wideness of all the counters on there. So I think that may be a safe one to pick up. I can't see it getting any cheaper than 50 cents as a bulk mythic on Magic Online.
It just seems to me like a casual / EDH card. Is there a real Moto upside for cards like that?
Not really. I think that there ever becomes a morph deck, there's potential. I mean, just it getting kilts and you have 5 tokens out of that is pretty, I think it's pretty powerful. I don't know. I think there's potential.
Okay.
In standard. And I don't know. It could be more than a 50 cent card. I could be completely wrong, but the good thing about Bulk Mythics on Moto, you can sell them for pretty much what you bought them for, so.
I like it way more for bulk prices on Moto than I do at $250 in real life.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it'll I'm not saying it won't go above 250 eventually. I'm saying it will go below 250 before it goes above 250.
Right.
So don't buy them now.
In paper.
In paper, correct. But I mean, it's every time they just inundate us with Hydras, I'm like, it's more choices for Hydra players. Because I have a Varel EDH deck, and I really love Hydras in that deck. And this is one of the better ones they've ever printed. This, like, I'm taking good Hydras out of Varel to make room for this in Hardened Scales. So, like, we always say if you're the best at what you do, you know, until something comes along and does better, you're the one that's going to get played in these non-rotating formats.
This is the Wrath Protection Hydra.
Yeah, so Hooded Hydra is one of the best Hydras they've ever printed.
It's a good gachu. If you got this and they try to remove your, you know, your morph creature or something, and then you flip over your Hydra like, haha, now I got five snake on the ground.
Yeah, I mean, I was already playing Chasm Skulker in that deck, so you know, having a green Chasm Skulker seems fine.
And we see that Ashcloud Phoenix has now been proven to be a standard player. So, I mean, that's another... I mean, I really think that there could be a morph deck potentially, but they need the right cards.
All right.
It'd be interesting. I don't know.
I think you're going to see the good morphs that are played now continue to be played.
Yes, as is. You'll see Rattleclaw Mystic being played and the Phoenix, and that's it.
I mean, before the cast started... We got into it a little bit when Marcel was like, aha, every tribe was represented at the PT and or the GP, and you guys were saying that you're making fun of me on the the set review when I was like, oh, you know, the Outlast deck needs this and the Morph deck, blah, blah, blah. I mean, we weren't saying that there wouldn't be a teamer deck. I just didn't think there would be a Morph deck, and I, you know, still don't necessarily. So.
Yes, but that wasn't the statement that was made. It was Corbin asked me, do you think that all five tribes will be represented? And I said, yes, they will. And then you wanted to break it down that I meant Absinthe was an Outlast deck. And that's exactly not what I said.
I will claim that if you go back and look at and listen to that podcast, that the times that I took, spoke up about you thinking everything was playable is because you talked about an Outlast. You're like, there's going to be an Outlast deck. And there's going to be a raid deck. And it's like, there's not. There just happened to be.
There was going
to
be a raid deck.
There happened to be decks in those color combinations, yes.
I didn't say there's going to be. I said there's going to be a Butcher.
Well, we recorded the episode, so there's an easy way to
No one at home actually cares.
That's true. I'm telling you the things that in my mind set the conversation off was that not every mechanic from each clan is going to be represented, even if the colors are.
Isn't that funny?
I never made that claim.
Isn't that funny that there's a Mardu deck that has like no raid triggers?
Exactly. It's a Mardu deck. It's just a deck that happens to be in those colors.
Yeah, I think that's cool. You know, I think that's cool. Like just the other utility stuff. It's like, yeah, Ankle Shanker's cute, but man, Crackling Doom's really good. And how about Sorin and Sarkhan? And that's in those Mardu decks. I think that's kind of cool.
I will say this, Marcel. I will eat crow on Sorin. And if I was to go, back and listen to the episode and I was, whether I phrased my statement wrong or was just wrong about it, I will admit that you were right on quite a bit of that stuff. And you were certainly right about Sorin.
I can't remember. You were like, what's going to happen is there's going to be mostly two color decks and some mono colors, and people that are going to try to play these three color decks are going to be punished due to their mono base, and they're not going to be able to survive because people are going to be playing more powerful cards, and these other colors and three colors are not going to be viable.
That's pretty strong. What I said is the trade-off for those three colors has to be better enough than having a consistent deck that deals you no damage. And if you look at the top eight of both events from last weekend, there was a mono red 17 land red deck doing exactly what I said, taking advantage of those decks stumbling, playing three colors.
It's funny, like there were Esper decks, but there are also like Dimir decks too. So like it's starting to, people are starting to really explore the space they're giving. Cause when the mana is good, you're not going to have a really small handful of tier one decks. Like everybody was playing mono black or mono blue. It was so boring when it was Theros and Ravblock. Standard was just god awful. And now with the mana so good, people are really starting to explore all the freedom they're given. Cause there was good one and two color stuff in the Theros block. And there's good, you know, two and three, one and two and three colored stuff in this block. and people were really starting to put that together. I bet there's going to be a Jun deck. I bet there will be a Bant deck. I bet there will be a Grixis deck.
There's a five-color deck. I was approaching it the wrong way. I was approaching it the wrong way at first. I think I finally figured out the mana base. I was trying to make a three-color tribe and then splash the other two. I think what you actually do is you start with green, which has to be your primary. You have one secondary, which I think is black. You build your mana base off that, and then you have three splash colors. And that's it. And you make sure, like, you can't run a card like Elsbeth. Like, as much as I want to, it just can't play it. So I'm working on that now. If I get a chance to actually go this weekend to the TCG player 50K, I will be playing five color.
There needs to be, you need to win with Chromatic Horror.
I would love to see you do something with five color. I'm only running
a two color two Chromatic Horror. And, for the most part, it's four Pelucranos, four Siege Rhino, four Sylvan Caryatid, and four Rattleclaw Mystic is where you start. You just force mana.
So tell me why you can't play Elsbeth?
The double white's too hard.
Yeah. You can't play double white on
and Elsbeth,
six.
Elsbeth, no, you can't. Like, plain and simple, you can't. Honestly, as good as Elsbeth is, she's not as fantastic as you want her to be in this format.
She's not great in this format, I'll give you that. I will say
she is certainly not worth stretching my. I want white for Siege Rhino and Absent Charm. That is it.
If your five color deck can't make double white on turn six, you might want to look at why you're playing five colors. I won't disagree with you that she's not incredible in the format.
No, you're not understanding. I don't want to build my mana base to be forced to make double white.
Okay.
It's not that the deck could not do it. It is that you should never need to consistently have double white because the card is not powerful enough to have to shoehorn it in.
It is a very good card. However, I am Chromanticore.
Like, honestly, if Chromanticore costs four, it would be a four up. But, like, the deck is play a two drop, play a four drop on turn three, and force up your opponent to deal with them because you're just playing the best cards in the format.
Yeah.
Like, Siege Rhino with backup. You get to play Treasure Cruise and Abs, and that was the way I started in five color. Well, no, actually, like, in
that
the mirror
sounds
match,
fun.
Treasure,
I won't lie to you.
Treasure Cruise. Well, the way I was originally trying to approach it was like, what can you do in the Abs and mirror match to just like break that wide open? Because obviously, like, that's something you have to figure out right now in order to figure out this format. Because like, Abs is just a big deal. And all I could come to is like, you need to beat them out in card advantage. And I was like, what's a really simple splash, or what's something that's already there that you could run? And obviously, like, Abs and Charm is good card advantage. But the only thing I could think of that like just hands down gives you that card advantage and you can actually cast reasonably in the mid game is Treasure Cruise. And so I started playing around with that. And initially, I was like splashing for Kiora, and I was like, I didn't like her enough, so DC, but like if they lightning strike her, she's just kind of weak on four. Still wanted to be able to play Siege Rhino, obviously, so I was looking for another four drop, and like Pelucranos is the best place you can be. So really the way you have to build this deck is like base green, base black, and then I'm splashing blue at the current moment for Ashiok, Chromanticore, obviously, and Treasure Cruise, and then the white splash is pretty much Siege Rhino, Abs and Charm, and the red splash is almost solely Chromanticore.
Absolutely. Please, please, I hope you do well with this deck. That would be even more fun than when you did well with that other stupid card you like, Seance. Five color would be sweet.
The biggest issue with five color and the big deterrent for not going five color is you cannot play fetch lands. And that like shuts off a major part of your mana base. Right. And you can't take too much pain because I'm not running Corsair of Kruphix. You can't afford to play the guy. Like, he doesn't pair well into a deck that wants to be going two drop mana dude, four drop. So, like, there's just no room in the deck for him.
Sure. I believe. Like,
I mean, hey.
There we go.
When's the last time you played Standard?
Make it happen, Ryan. I played a game day.
Oh, okay. What'd you play? You actually played Magic?
Well, I mean, I play the deck that I walk into to any event I play at and say, hey, does anyone have an extra deck this week? And somebody hands me a deck and I play it without looking at what the deck is until I draw my opening hand. This time it was Abzan Aggro. And that deck was okay, but not great. So I didn't do well.
How many death dealers?
Four.
Oh, talk about eating crow.
Did I call that card bad?
Did I call
it? Oh, you called it a bulk rare. Yeah. You and Marcel like both took turns shitting on it while I wept.
Yes,
I was like, it's good. Come on. And you guys like, no. Marcel, I'll hold the card down and you poop on it, and then you hold it down and I'll poop on it. And I was like,
here's my question. Did I call it bulk because it's bad, or hey, this card's good, but this set has so many valuable cards in it, some of these good cards have to be cheap?
No, you thought it was bad. You're like, it's a bad.
You're right. I called it a bad future leech. All right. I was wrong. I
see, this
it.
Is Corman's reenactment of life when he doesn't go back and actually
revisionist history.
Yeah, I know. This is how I thought it happened, you know.
Did I say Death Dealer was a bad card, or did I say it would be a folk rare because it's too good and people won't feel it's unfair to play it because it's so good?
I just asked because I did make that statement, and I think Crater's Claws is currently the card that proves it, where even cards that are good in four ofs can be very cheap because of how expensive the set is. But I was very wrong about Death Dealer.
So I want to call on our listeners. If you could find all the ways that we were stupid on our set review, the last one, and then compile it in something, we're going to send you tokens. So they send it in.
Offered them an incentive they didn't need to call us stupid.
Yeah, please. And then whoever calls us the most stupid or figures out the most holes in our wild set review, especially my Outlast deck that I thought was going to happen. Yeah, you could call it all out there, and we're gonna own it up on the next episode.
Oh yeah, we got that whole Fogo bet, huh?
Oh, I still think that card's good.
You're owing Jason Fogo, no doubt about it.
I'm
on a crazy Fogo bet kick lately.
Herald of Anna Marcel,
I'm betting everybody.
Man, there's Fogo going everywhere. Like, we gotta actually go to Fogo.
Herald of Anna Finza. All right, so let's just give the update. The bet was that Herald of Anna Finza would go to, was it $5 in standard, or was it $3?
It was the high priest,
It was Herald of Anna Finza.
No, it was the guy, the flying guy, the 4/3 that gives the counter if you pay four.
I thought it was the one that makes tokens when you pay for it.
No, it's the bird that if you pay 4 mana, you put a 1/1 creature on one of their dudes.
Again.
Are we talking about this card again?
I just wanted to update people. I just want to update people on the bet. I thought it was Herald of Anna Finza, which is 42 cents. What's the other one?
It's a ball card.
For now.
Why? It's fine. At least
it's high it's high sentinels of a ration.
Yes.
And it's 49 cents right now.
See? There's a lot of upside there.
I mean, the plus side is there's not a lot of downside, I guess. I'll give you that. There's not a lot of downside to the card.
Marcel, I see one listed on TCG Player for literally one penny.
Oh, hey, I'm willing to eat crow. I gotta have some.
No, Marcel,
sauce.
You don't eat crow. You dump your money into it. You show people that you got some devotion.
Marcel,
and then three years later when the card goes up, you're like, see, I told you.
There's only like 500 copies on TCG Player. Just go buy them all and you'll win.
Okay, I'll do that.
They're not expensive.
It's a cheap bet to win. You only have to spend $250 to do it.
We all said some stupid stuff on the set review.
If I spent $250, I don't have to buy Jason $45 worth of Fogo to Chow. That's how I'm going to win.
Exactly. As long as you don't get
it. Is being right worth $200 to you? Maybe.
Maybe.
My reputation, man. You know, I'm well respected in this finance community.
I'm just going to get the meat sweats from some of these Fogo bets.
The rotation set review is the hardest one in existence. And we all said some dumb stuff.
Oh, yes, we have.
But did we make people money? That's what I want to know.
I believe we did.
Like, I mean, we potentially lost people money if they didn't buy something, you know, that they would have. And we talked out of
that
it.
That later went up.
The price went up. But, you know, that's potential money. I think we made people real money when they bought stuff for cheap that went up. So
also, Raksha's a Death Dealer went from $2 to $3.50. So not exactly a lot of missed money there.
Hey, so do you got a foil Utter's End game day promo? I need that for the queue.
I do.
Okay, let's talk.
I top 16'd the 12 person game day, so I got one of our promos.
Oh, if you top 16, you get one.
Well. We only had one game day and 16 promos, and there were 12 people. So the top four got two, and the rest of us all got one.
You guys hear this envelope? This is a foil Chromanticore going out in the mail to Marcel for his cube, signed by me.
Yes, that's going to be one of the best. That will never leave the cube. Like, I don't care what's...
Is Jason contractually obligated to draft it? That's
no,
what I want to
know. Am.
Oh, yeah, that's fair.
It just starts out in my pool.
What's a good reason to go five color?
Anytime I draft, I will be taking that card.
The card's the boss in limited, you know?
Yep, it's a boss in everything. Oh. Have you put that card on anything yet? See, that's the thing is like no one believes me, and then people start casting the card. And yeah, it's hard to cast, and it's five colors, but the first time you have that card in play, you feel like you own Standard.
I know, I don't
It brings stuff back from your graveyard, guys. It's so good. It makes tokens of all your creatures on your upkeep.
That card
was fantastic.
Sorry,
what are we talking about?
Hey, I'm sorry. I won an event with that deck, and it did very well in a couple of others. Like,
I thought you top eighted.
Sorry, top eight. Whatever.
He won an F and M.
Called out.
I did win a local event with it, but I didn't. No, the big event I did top eight.
Great.
So let's leave. Where can people find you guys? We haven't done that in a while.
Didn't we just do that last episode?
Oh, maybe.
Well, we should let him know where to find Corbin since he hasn't been around for a while. For sure.
Oh yeah, yeah, it was Corbin, huh?
Great. I'm Corbin.
Not podcasting. Ew, get the sniffles. Ooh.
I also had quite a bit to do after being out of town for a week. I'm Corbin Hostler. You can find me on Twitter at chosler88, chosler88. I write for Quiet Speculation, Empeopled, you know, Brainstorm Brewery occasionally.
And Wizards, obviously, right?
Yes, I do coverage for Wizards of the Coast.
And you have an official shirt and a polo?
I did. I finally got, after multiple events of judges asking me to leave the area because they thought I was just a spectator, I finally have a coverage shirt. So that's exciting.
There you go.
Now they ask you to leave the area because you breathe really loudly through your mouth.
Yeah, that's pretty much
standing
it.
Standing there.
Yeah. I'm official now. I breathe loud.
Fucking mouth breather.
That's our Corbin outro right there.
Great. Thanks.
That's so fine because he won't listen to last week's episode and he'll never know what we said.
Exactly.
That's true.
There's a lot of FOGO to go around, but not enough.
There's enough to FOGO around.
Oh my God.
Corbin, are you in agreement that you will never listen to last week's episode?
Sure. Never listened to any of our podcasts before. Why would I start now?
Okay. Perfect. All right, cool. That's all we wanted.
I was there when it happened most of the time, and I just don't want to hear you guys make fun of me for an hour.
We said some real nice things.
Oh, we did.
Well, I don't want to hear you say nice things about me either. It'll go to my head, and then I'll come on here.
Yeah, your head is already pretty big.
Yeah, I'll come back on here and get put in my place again. I don't want that either.
But that happens every week. So what's the difference? Well, whatever.
I see a trend.
we predicted this. Everything that we said just came true on this episode.
It's like we hang out for hours every week, and you guys know me a little bit.
I know. People thought we were making this shit up. No, this is actual real life here, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. This is real life is how we've been trying to get off the podcast, and we're really bad about that, too.
Is that going to be another fucking hour and a half cast again?
No.
No, we can't do that again.
Why not?
It's
already
hate
for those of you who follow me on Twitter will notice that I was like, I'm really sorry for this week's podcast episode. I really thought that it would be different. And then Marcel responded to me on Twitter. He's like, what did you think I should have cut or something like that? I was like, the entire last half hour at 50 minutes, we're like, oh, we got 50 minutes of good material. And you could hear us saying things that we clearly thought were behind the scenes. I think a lot of people enjoyed that. Some people turned it off. But some people really got
but the people
a
who turned
kick
it off
out of
didn't
getting
miss
some
anything.
Insight into the podcast making process. So if you enjoyed last week's episode, thank you. If you didn't, I don't know. I sympathize, I guess.
Thank you. Just say thank you to everybody. We love you all. Something, I don't know, very neutral. More,
I think maybe now's a good time to stop saying words.
Yep.
For you or for all of us?
Probably for everybody.
I mean, I agree with 25% of that notion.
Please don't air that ever.
But this whole episode? Yeah.
Just the last 15 minutes. As soon as Ryan went off into the five color conversation, you knew it was over.
We can be found on GatheringMagic.com and BrainstormBrewery.com.